Friday night, hour number 3, and it's Jeff and Erica time again. We're going to try to continue keeping you absolutely on the front edge of information as this so-called pandemic winds down and morphs into something else, which will be kind of more of the same. In other words, lies, unfortunately, death. This has been planned for a long time. As Dr. Robert Malone said on video, this has been planned and gamed for over 20 years. So think about it. They don't play games. No mistakes. Erica, welcome back.
Oh, good evening, Jeff. Thanks for having me back.
You're welcome. You having a nice day?
Yes, the weather was pretty nice here today. Spring is coming.
Good. Yes, that's what I hear. All right. We're into even more treacherous times. We've got a potential of a war, either local, regional, or global. That's not a joke. We don't know exactly where this is going, but no one, especially on the west side of the political ledger, i.e. the U.S., the U.K., and NATO, which it runs, we run NATO, make no mistake about it. Not one word about de-escalation, about peace, about resolving the differences and stopping the catastrophic abuse of that country by internationalists, globalists, monetary oligarchs, that phony President Zelensky, the little fraud was who was put in there. This is all, again, a game, but it's a deadly game. And we did get to play. Thank you for sending that, by the way, that young man who foolishly went over there to fight for the brave Ukrainian government and Zelensky and the Ukrainian military and so forth. And he found out that things are not exactly what they're told. And he was very lucky to get out with his life. So it's believe it. All the material you're seeing routinely in the mainstream media about Ukraine is essentially a lie to one degree or another. It's social engineering. It's mind control. It's Edward L. Bernays, and he would be howling with laughter. So would Pavlov at the way the media runs the sheep. It's what they do.
Yeah, it's totally twisted. It's 180 degrees, the opposite of reality.
180, exactly right. Just like what we have been hearing from a lot of people about this plandemic. 100 degrees, 180, 120, whatever. It's way off reality. What is happening is I think they've pretty well run out of most of the COVID energy, and they're beginning to shift over to, as we've been telling people for weeks and weeks now, HIV as being the culprit. When people ask, well, why is my immune system dead? They say, well, you must have HIV. And they're setting this whole thing up to try to shift the blame away from the obvious culprit, which is the bioweapon vax, which has caused the immune system to die in human beings. It destroyed the blood and many, many other, too many other things to count. It's not that at all. And they're going to try and hang it on HIV. That's what they're doing.
I have to think that was the plan all along. When you look at these sequences that have been coincidentally included in the spike protein, they're, you know, some of the offending sequences in the GP120 protein, which is the spike on the HIV virus. The fact that they're also appearing in the spike protein of this coronavirus, I think that it was intentional. And even though they're merely proteins, proteins are not necessarily innocuous, depending on how they interact with the immune system and what the immune system decides to do with them, how it decides to react. And some of these HIV proteins are immune suppressive. Even though it's not a replicating virus, the way they interact with the immune system can be devastating.
Or
so
worse.
So hard to think that wasn't part of the plan.
part of the plan. They needed something to trigger a positive response in an HIV test, correct? And those sequences in the spike will do that, or
yeah,
certainly are capable
several,
of doing that.
Several marker proteins that you would look for to try to determine if somebody was actually infected with the virus. And I do believe that that P24 protein, that would be the screening test, the protein that they would
right.
use in a simple screening test. I believe that that would probably come up positive in somebody that's had the vax at this point. But time will tell. They can rig these tests so that they come up positive for whatever they want to have it read. We know that.
Yes. Yeah. No question. None. There are a number of things that we want to cover this evening, so we might want to get going. Pathologist Dr. Ryan Cole has spent about almost 20 minutes, not quite, with Steve Kirsch talking about this is very interesting. When we talk about blood clots, people get blood clots. People have always gotten blood clots, and the body is quite often able to resolve that. They can dissolve and get rid of the blood clots. The blood clots caused by the spike protein are not the same kind of blood clot at all. This is quite a surprise to me. I thought blood clots were blood clots until recently. Tell us briefly what the difference is. What's going on here?
Well, they've discovered in this viral infection, SARS-CoV-2, that the spike protein is inducing very abnormal clots. And these are clots that have amyloid proteins in them, so they're not normal. They're resistant to being broken down in the normal way that your body would break clots down after they've done their job. They stick around. They can grow. And they're problematic. They eventually will form a plug in whatever vessel they're forming in, and they're very, very difficult to deal with. And these seem to be prevalent in people who have this, what they're calling long COVID, which I've heard is something like 100 million people right now that had the virus, got over it, but they're stuck with these lingering symptoms that are just
100 million that we know about. Now, that's not here in the U.S., is it? That's just
I'm
Western world?
I'm assuming that's global.
Okay.
You know, whatever right. countries they're keeping numbers for.
Right.
But these lingering symptoms are debilitating. I mean, the brain fog, fatigue, just shortness of breath. People don't feel well. And so the more researchers have looked into this, it's becoming apparent that this clotting, this inability of the blood to function normally is at the root of a lot of these symptoms. And these clots are really problematic. So this researcher in South Africa, her name is Resia, R-E-S-I-A, Pretorius, has looked into this extensively and published a paper in, I believe it was 2020, describing mm-hmm. how some viruses and bacterial antigens can induce this type of pathological clotting in people that it makes it very, very difficult to deal with without some sort of pharmaceutical interventions. So she wrote a paper about it, and that's sort of being talked about extensively right now. And Ryan Cole is also speaking on it, among others.
Quite. Question. The physiology of the clots caused by the bioweapon injection, the spike protein, are not the same as a normal blood clot in the human body. Can you elaborate a little bit more on what the differences are and why the spike protein-caused blood clot might not be responsive to things like heparin and other anticoagulant pharmaceuticals?
Right. So these clots that are formed, they form very, very quickly. They don't form in an orderly fashion. So they're chaotic. They include things that wouldn't normally be a part of a clot. So some of which can be the inflammatory markers that you would look for on a blood test to determine if a person is clotting, such as D-dimer. So even though the D-dimer is a good test to try to determine if somebody's forming these microclots, it's not 100% conclusive.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes the D-dimer, what they measure for the D-dimer, is caught up in these clots.
It's bound up in the clots, so the D-dimer can't do its job and actually read for clotting.
So when you draw the blood, what they're looking for is not actually present in the blood that they're able to draw.
How tricky.
But there's other ways around that. But these clots are structurally abnormal, and they're also abnormal in their composition. As I said, there's other things in there that wouldn't normally be found in a normal clot.
Uh-huh.
So the body has mechanisms to break clots down, as I said, when they're finished doing their job, but not these. And so they come up with somewhat of a regimen, a protocol for dealing with these, and it involves antiplatelet medications such as aspirin or what's known as Plavix, and then you need something to address the actual coagulation cascade,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and that would be something like warfarin or Coumadin or heparin. And then if things are really desperate, they'll do something called apheresis, which is where they will actually take the blood out and then precipitate some of these proteins like the lipoprotein and the fibrinogen that are the culprits and the biggest culprits in these clots, and then filter those out and reintroduce the blood to kind of thin it out a little bit.
Wow.
But yeah, so I mean this virus is a blood destroyer.
It's a life destroyer. Is what it is.
Well, yeah, without your blood, you're in trouble. So this does explain these rubbery clots that the embalmers have been reporting rather consistently in people that have died following the vaccine or injection. And they're very, very rubbery because they've got this high protein component to it.
They're kind of like a flat pasta noodle, if you will.
Yeah.
That's what they look like.
Or worm-like, almost.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but they're often... The pictures I've seen, they're often flat. Some are roundish. But the point is they plug up your blood flow. You can't make it.
Yeah, they just keep growing.
They don't stop. They would probably grow the full length and width of your circulatory system if they were allowed to. Of course, the body won't live that long. It'll die. Here's Dr. Ryan Cole, the pathologist, talking to Steve Kirsch about what we're discussing right now. So let's go ahead and listen to this. It's about 16 minutes. We'll probably stop it a few times and discuss some things. But it's the first time I've heard someone speak with clarity about this. And I must also say I am very disappointed in many people who will not stand up as tall as most people think that those people are. They just don't do it. And they're somehow subjugated, they're compromised, they're controlled, they've been threatened, whatever it is. We do not have much medical leadership in this country at all. We just don't. All right. Here's an exception. Dr. Ryan Cole.
I'm Steve Kirsch, Executive Director of the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation. I have Dr. Ryan Cole here. He's a pathologist, been a pathologist for a long time, and a lot of people know who he is without further introduction. We're here today talking about blood clots, and in particular, embalmers have reported that they're seeing these unusual clots that they've never seen before in their entire history. And it only started after the vaccines rolled out and seems only to be in vaccinated patients. So I had one embalmer who had multiple cases, and they knew which had the telltale clots and which didn't have the telltale clots. And they went back and they found the vaccination status, and it matched up 100% to what they observed. So So this is rather damning. There's a lot of association there that shows these clots are never happened before, and they're only associated with vaccinated people. So Ryan got some samples of these blood clots so he could examine them and see what they look like, right? Because the question is, could these clots have been caused by the vaccine, or they're clearly caused by something else? And so let's
see, that makes my point. This should not ever be referred to as a vaccine. It wasn't designed to be a vaccine. It wasn't created to be a vaccine. It is a deadly bioweapon. And Kirsch should not call it a vaccine without qualifying it at least occasionally as being what it really is. Just my two cents.
No, I agree.
The chase here, Ryan. So, these clots have been seen in up to 93% of the cases for embalmers, generally 40% or higher. And that's troubling. So if you have, first of all, if you have these clots in your system, is that something that people can live with, or is that something that basically is just a ticking time bomb and it will kill you within a short amount of time once you develop these clots?
That's a great question. The interesting thing in a lot of these patients, you know, there's some blood tests we can do in the lab, one called a D-dimer, which says, you know, a clot is present. So when you see an elevated D-dimer, you think, oh, gosh, this patient's clotting. And usually the doctors, the ER doc, the pulmonologist is going to do a scan of the chest, CT, and see if there's a big pulmonary clot. Because usually if you have an elevated D-dimer, that's the direction that one thinks. But they weren't finding those. So then that begs the question, well, where are the patients clotting? And most of, you know, the docs who are thinking and engaging in this are saying, well, then it's got to be microclots. And to that point, I have a colleague, you know, I see it in the skin, biopsies, some microclots. A colleague down in Texas who's a GI pathologist, and so he gets a lot of, you know, colon and stomach biopsies. And after the shots rolled out, he was seeing tons of microclots in his biopsies. So you can live with microclots. You can live even with medium-sized clots. And I'll get to that in a second once we start showing these, because you'll see why you can live with them at least for a while. And
now, for those of you who are new, microclotting caused by the spike protein is a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week process. They don't stop being constructed. We do believe they will build up and they will compound in their efficacy in terms of shutting off the blood flow through capillaries and then perhaps larger veins. We do know that there are cells on the downside of a blood clot which are killed off very quickly when the blood supply is shut down. They die. And if it happens in your brain, that part of your brain dies. But it's important to know, and this just really came to my attention today, that on the upside of a blood clot in a capillary, the cells also die because the blood is not moving through. It is stagnant. It's run into this clot. So on the downside of the clot, cells die. On the upside of the clot, cells die also. So you kind of have double the damage at half the price. Erica?
Yeah, definitely. And I a telltale sign without actually measuring the blood at some point is if these rashes that people are reporting after the injection are often, that's the indication in the skin of microclotting in some cases. And uh-huh. It looks like a rash. It's red. It's probably not itchy at that point. Depends, but that would be a telltale sign that you'd probably want to get checked out.
And we also sadly want to point out that you don't necessarily have to have been injected with the bioweapon to develop this.
That's right.
Microclotting. We have something called transmission or shedding, and unfortunately, you can be shed upon with spike protein. And you can then, thereafter, begin to develop, as long as your body hasn't overcome and overwhelmed the spike protein, you can get microclots as well. And if they happen in the brain, that's permanent brain damage. And then we got the prion issues. That's another point we'll get to maybe later. Okay, ready to go back to Ryan Cole?
Yep, ready.
Okay, here we go.
And so you can live with the clot there, but the tissues around it eventually become compromised, or the tissues upstream from where that clot forms eventually become compromised because you don't have oxygen getting there. And then the tissues die off or become malfunctional. So livable.
And he's talking about tissues in any organ in your body, muscular, liver, spleen, brain, it doesn't matter. He's talking about death from microclots, cellular death.
To a degree for a while, till it isn't.
But these massive clots that people are seeing, right? Like they can't get an embalming fluid into the body because that they pull out these massive clots. I mean, that basically is what killed people, right? I mean, you can't live with these.
It's one of the factors that's killing people. And you're right, because the clot keeps on forming and forming and forming and forming. And
it
so
just gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
It snowballs. Yeah, it snowballs. The platelets come along and say, hey, I think I'll stick to that. And the red cells come along, hey, I'll stick to that. And then more fibrin comes along, the protein.
So it's like a rolling stone, the tumbleweed or the whatever.
Yeah. It keeps gathering more and more. And then you have a big flopping. And this is what's interesting about these is they're kind of anchored to the wall of a vessel. And then you have this big kind of polypy plug. And for a while, it's kind of like this flappy valve, and blood, you know, tries to work around it, but as it grows, then you end up blocking off.
Right. So these are tissue samples or whole bodies that you got?
These are tissue samples. So these are the actual clots from within these larger vessels. And to your point, the morticians that usually they'll put a dissolving fluid in to break up a clot so they can get their embalming fluid in. And they were getting back pressure on the system saying, what in the world is going on? So they ended up, you know, going in, grabbing and snaking onto these things and pulling out, you know, 6-inch clots, 12-inch clots, 2-3 foot long clots, because, you know, from the hip down into the leg, you have a long vein called the saphenous vein. And so they were pulling long clots out of your longer veins.
These are not red blood clots. These are beige colored. They look rather like pasta noodles, flat noodles, if you've seen those quite often. They do have different shapes. These are large things. They're not small. And I think the point he makes is very, very critically important here. These can grow anywhere, and you can't. These will not respond to normal treatment for clotting. These are different.
Correct. Yep.
Anything else you want to add?
No, it's just really mind-blowing that a clot could be 2 feet long. I mean, that's
totally.
Obviously something that's ongoing.
Correct. Yeah. And there are plenty of pictures of them online. You can find them.
Yeah.
Mystery white clots. They call them white because they're not red. These are not natural to the human body. These come from the kill shots, the bioweapons.
Yep.
They were designed and created over a period of at least 2 decades, maybe longer. We don't know for sure.
And to your point, they hadn't seen anything like this previously.
When did you first start hearing reports of this?
A couple months back. I saw the pictures on the internet. A couple of friends had said, hey, have you ever seen anything like this? Do you think this is real? I said, well, trust but verify is kind of how I work. You know, I observe and then I do the science. And so for me, it was like, okay, that looks interesting. It looks legitimate, but I'll believe it when I see it. And now I've seen it.
Okay, so a couple of months ago it started, but the we're on a recording. Oh, man.
That's real life. It's all good.
It is real life. But the vaccines have been out since January. Now, so you said, you know, three months ago. I mean, we're talking the vaccines have been out for a year, how come you're only seeing this now, or have people been seeing it before and they're just not reporting it before, been too scared to report it?
I think it's that fear factor. I think you hit the nail on the head, because as I talk to some of these morticians, I have two hypotheses on these. Number one, they were seeing it and they were like, huh, this is weird, and didn't think anything of it. Or it could be after one shot, you don't see a whole lot of it. After two, you see more. And after three, you see a lot.
So it's really the boosters that really started the punch here.
I think so, because, you know, in life, the dose makes the poison. If you drink too much water, you can die.
Right. I tend to disagree with that. I think it depends upon the strength of the dose. I think the first shot could easily trigger this kind of an onset. How rapid, I don't know. The boosters are highly suspicious, certainly to come in and clean up and make damn sure that they have been successful in clotting people to death. But I do think that there is a chance after one or two shots, because of what the Germans found. And they found that after two shots, you only have 12% of your immune system left. And that was just the immune function.
Yeah, one seems to be enough to do some damage. Let's not forget the work of that Dr. Arne Burkhardt, with several autopsies that he did that found that most of the major organs were infiltrated by, you know, immune complexes having to do with the spike protein.
The spike protein, the most deadly evil thing contrived by mankind, according to Dr. Chetty, and he is every one of these honorable doctors, and certainly Dr. Cole is one. I wish they would stand firm. I understand why they don't. There is a fear factor, as he mentioned, and I'm taking it out of context a little bit, but they don't want to lose their licenses. They don't want to lose their jobs, but when you find somebody standing up and saying that this is a deadly bioweapon, end of story. You got a leader. And that's what we want to see.
Yep.
Water makes the poison. And the dose of spike protein makes the poison. There was the Stanford study that came out a couple weeks ago that showed how long the mRNA is still persisting within the lymph nodes and still generating spike. And in their study, it was up to 60 days.
All right. We have, and I hate to keep interrupting, but Eric and I have spent a lot of time talking about this, and I will not speak for her. I don't. But I believe, until we have evidence to the contrary, it is possible that the mRNA can continue to order the body to create spike proteins at least indefinitely. That's my sense.
We have the evidence now, at least in vitro, that the mRNA is reverse transcribed into DNA and potentially integrated into the genome permanently. And if that's the case, then yes, you could be producing this indefinitely, forever, maybe consistently or periodically.
Well, there won't be a forever if you have spike protein being put in your system. You're
right
on a short track out of here. So whether it's 60 days, 6 weeks, or a year, that spike protein is going to take you out sooner or later.
Unless you can have access to the CRISPR technology, where they might be able to edit it out of your genome.
Well, remember the Chinese Communist Party video that we were never able to ascertain as being completely accurately in its translation, although I never had anyone say it wasn't, never. And they said, the one guy said, don't worry about the Americans. Everyone who has taken a shot is going to die. That's what he said. Now, I hope that's not correct. I hope it's wrong. But at this point in time, we don't know. All right, back to the video.
mRNA and making spikes. So, and this is what's fascinating, is this isn't a classical clotting pathway. Normally, normally you have an entire waterfall. You know, this complement factor needs to trigger this, needs to trigger that, this factor needs to trigger in order for each step of a clot to form. But with the spike protein, and this was a really good paper just recently, you know, a couple of weeks ago as well, from Dr. Pretorius out of South Africa, because they were saying, look, something's going wrong here. And so she has a way she measures the elasticity of platelets, and they did flow studies within tubes with normal blood, which, you know, will form a little clot along the side wall because clots can form on glass. But then when they put spike protein in, incredibly abnormal clots started to form. And what was super fascinating in her studies is normally you think of, okay, in order to form a clot, you need your platelets and you need your thrombin, you need your fibrin and fibrinogen and all the different factors. And so you think traditionally you've got a platelet and fibrin clot. What she found is she took plasma that didn't have platelets in it, and just putting the spike in clumped all the fibrin and, you know, the fibrinogen, and all the different splits that have to happen and lattice it all together without platelets was causing all that protein to stick together as well.
Right. So you have plausibility here.
Absolutely.
If I asked you, what's your confidence level that these strange clots that, you know, you have the samples of, you've seen the 3-foot, what is your confidence level that this is caused by the vaccine?
About 80 to 90%. I still want to do a few more studies on the ones I have. I haven't had time because I've been traveling and lecturing, but 80 to 90% just based on the papers that have come out and the mechanisms that have been explained.
Okay, so Ryan, if it's not caused by the vaccine, then what's causing these clots? How come we've never seen them before?
Well, there are plenty of conditions in the body, infections, bacteria. There's a condition called disseminated intravascular coagulation. So there are a lot of other infections that can also trigger clotting processes.
No, but not in 93% of the cases.
Right. That's a rare case where you get a patient with a septic infection and then they start clotting. So, you know, do we see clotting in medicine? Absolutely. There's a lot of different conditions.
No, but you see clots like this.
No, 2 to 3 foot long clots. No.
You've never seen these before, Ryan.
No, and
so,
this.
So the cause has to be something that doesn't exist.
Oh yeah. I mean, if we're using Bradford Hill criteria, yeah. You know, approximate.
What is the other possible cause?
No, I agree with you. I know which direction you're going, and I agree with you. I mean,
it's not 80 or 90% then.
Well, I've got to put the final, you know, little nail in the board to make sure it's
okay. But if I ask you,
I agree with you. No, I agree.
Basically saying like, I don't have a clue as to what other thing might cause it. It's something that I don't. It would have to be something that I don't know about.
I'm saying I think it's the spike causing it. Yeah, with you know, a 90%. I'd bet in Vegas on 9 out of 10 odds, and I'm betting once I do a few more protein marker stains, then it's going to be 99.99% odds.
Okay,
so we're heading.
Erica, the question by Kirsch was good. What the hell else could cause this? And there was, I really respect Ryan Cole and his science. He said, I've got to do a little bit more science. And if I do, and it comes out the way it looks like it's going to, it'll be 99.9997. It's obviously the bioweapon. It's the,
right.
It's the spike protein, which is so damn sophisticated and has so many ways of wreaking havoc in the body and destroying the body. It is sickening. That's how deadly this stuff is. And that's why when you're out and about and you're around other people, you don't know if they've been vaxxed or not. 2/3 of them have. You don't want to be inhaling their exhalations. You don't want to be shaking their hands. You don't want to be around them. Does that sound paranoid? No. It sounds like it's very practical to me. I don't want to get sick. I don't want them to get sick. But we've got to be aware of the danger that's out there. And it is, in fact, out there. This spike protein is being shed, among other things. Go ahead.
Yeah, we have pretty good evidence of that now from the mice study, where they took the exosomes from people who had been vaxxed and introduced them to mice, aerosolized them, and the mice did generate antibodies to the spike protein. So that's, I think, a pretty good guess or a pretty good evidence in support of, you know, people getting shed on and right. suffering consequences from it. So the spike itself is a blood poison.
Yes, it is.
It will cause clotting all by itself. Yeah. It doesn't need anything else.
Wow. Okay, let's get back to our video here.
When will that be?
Well, I'm actually finally home for a week or two here and not traveling, so I can, you know, at the scope, I have my day-to-day patients, so all this is in the wee hours of the night doing all the extra studies. So hopefully this next week I can do some of those, and awesome. By next week I have some, you know, more confirmatory results to add on to that.
All right, we're going to check back with you then, but in the meantime, can you... I've just got 4 minutes left because I got to hop on another call.
Sure.
Can you show us those slides that we talked about earlier, the sort of the before and after? And, you know, so, and it's also very troubling.
You can find this video under Jeff and Erica in guests. It's there and the link, so you can look at this again, share it, and you will see at the end of it, he's going to show some images here.
You see these people's blood before and after in these images on the internet, where you see the blood is moving normally, and then you see, oh, they just got vaccinated, and now you see the there's no movement on the slides. Is that something that you would expect and believe that's caused by the vaccine?
Yes, because it's causing an instant clumping.
Yep. Okay. All right. So explain, we've got like 3 minutes left. Explain what we're seeing.
Okay, so this pale pink part that you see in this photo, that would be what a normal clot looks like. Just a few cells trapped in it, that just pink, you know, no blue. In any normal clot, that's what it looks like. Now, to the left, that's what we're seeing.
You can use your mouse pointer, by the way, I think.
I don't know why it's not showing up.
Not moving.
No, it's not moving. That's okay. So on the left, all that, those blue dots, those are trapped cells. So in some clots, you'll see trapped cells, but I went ahead and stained these up to see what kind of cells, and I'll get to that in two slides here. So that pink like that is what a normal clot would look like, very acellular. And what's happening is this fibrin with some platelets in it and some red cells in it is all sticking together, but now it's causing all these other cells. These are mostly neutrophils and eosinophils, which eosinophils are like your allergic cells. They have a cell surface molecule that's sticky. It's called a cellular intercellular adhesion molecule. And so this is this brown. So I marked all these cells for the expression of this adhesion molecule. So what you're seeing on the surface, all that brown means every cell in there is triggered to express a cell protein that says stick to me, stick to me, stick to me. So normally going back, you'd see this nice pink, and then eventually the plasmin in your body breaks that clot down. And then when you measure, we'd see a D-dimer because the clot is breaking down. But we have way too many cells trapped. That's why these morticians are saying these are rubbery. I'm like, they're rubbery because a ton of that is protein. And there's a study that shows that the type of protein, it's kind of an amyloid. An amyloid is a protein clot. You get amyloid plaques and Alzheimer's and whatnot. So this is the problem. It's way too cellular. It's way too proteinaceous, way too much protein. And you know, rarely we'll see like this in a leg, and then vessels will grow through it and try to, you know, grow a new channel so that, like that little white slit, you know, it's trying to grow a channel through it so blood can keep trying to get through. But the body isn't breaking these down like it would normally either, because that spike bypasses all those different waterfall steps that you need to make a clot and is instantaneously causing a clot and or slowly over time causing it. So both pathways. So somebody may be feeling, you know, weak and fatigued and don't know why they're so wiped out, but they're wiped out because they're not perfusing their tissues, because the microclots, and these are big clots, but the little clots look like this too, which is what's odd. So it's not something we normally see in pathology. So it's a pattern that is highly unusual. And again, Dr. Pretorius's study, you know, she showed pretty well why the different cascades are happening, and it's the spike itself inducing them.
Okay, that's the end, and there's just a minute or so left, pleasantries and so forth. But do look at the video and do share it. Do think about it if you're interested in this field, and I hope you are, because even if you have not been vaxxed with the bioweapon, you are at risk to a degree. And again, I will remind you on behalf of Erica that transfusing into the human body right now is not a smart idea. They are not screening. They are not screening the blood for spike proteins. They will not even give modern day common medical scientists and doctors a quick spike protein test. They don't have it. They got it for HIV. They got it for this. They got it for that. But not for spike. The reason? They don't want it out there. That's why. Okay.
I agree.
So wrapping that up for us, Erica, we got two different clot processes, and he just did mention that the spike can cause instant clotting. Instant. And that has been the reason that some of these people have literally fallen over dead, like that that young lady, I forget her name now, the nurse, the first one.
Tiffany Dover.
Yeah, she just went down. Boom. Instant clotting from the spike. Okay. Anything else to add to that? They're different. Just remember that, folks.
Yeah, so they're getting a handle on the clotting issue. I mean, now we know that they're not normal and they don't break down. So if you're waiting for them to break down, you're going to be waiting a long time. And in the meantime, you're at risk of sudden death. I mean, so it is important if this is occurring in your body, you do need to seek treatment for it. You know, antiplatelets.
Yeah,
and anticoagulants.
Something. And don't forget about prions. That's another one. There's so, like I say, there's so many. This thing is so multifaceted in its evil, the spike protein. It's amazing. Now, time for my latest. And we like Andy Kaufman. We're sure he's a wonderful guy. But we do not buy into any of this. There is no virus stuff. And I want to bring something forward that if you're going to follow somebody, you want to know who you're following. Now, Andy Kaufman is about to say something on this next video that is so preposterous, it is, I guess it's beyond laughable. So let me play it, and then we'll have Erica explain this one. This is a whopper. This is Dr. Andy Kaufman.
I saw this great example of this clinic in India, which is somewhat maligned but also supported by local government money there. And it's like the doctor's name is Biswarup Chowdhury. And they've treated over 50,000 patients. And they say that, yeah, almost all of them were just the flu mislabeled as COVID. But nonetheless, they treated them there. They said 20% were serious. They had people there with oxygen saturations 35%. They did no...
Pay attention to that. 35% oxygen saturation.
No oxygen, no ventilators, no pharmaceuticals, nutrition and compassion only. And they have had zero deaths out of 55,000, including people, like I said, they would be immediately put on a ventilator in any Western hospital.
Okay. Erica, if I walked into a hospital and I had a 35% oxygen saturation rate, what would they say?
First of all, you wouldn't be walking. That's a corpse. That's not even compatible with life. I mean, if it drops below 70, you're having hallucinations, you're turning blue.
So why does he believe this? Why would he believe it, that that happened? Why? That
if
it's an impossibility.
It's scary. I don't know what the point of saying something like that is.
It is absolutely absurd. And ask any doctor, 35% oxygen saturation, what are my chances? He'll say, is the person still alive?
Yeah.
And yet Andy says, good food and compassion, and that's all you need. Hug your neighbors. So, look, I'm going to hold these people accountable for their bullshit, and that's just the way I am. If they're going to say it, and they put it out there in the public, this is what's going to happen. Okay. Now, we don't want to forget the human aspect of this. You want to go to the hearing loss and tinnitus here next?
Sure, yeah. Let's do that.
All right. You sent me two. You want to read one? Go ahead.
Yeah, let me get it in front of me here. Okay, so this is from the side effects group of primarily dealing with hearing loss and tinnitus. And this group's been set up for over a year now, and some of the people that are members who came to it seeking support are still dealing with their symptoms, you know, a year later, and posting about it. And they're rather sad. Here's one. Dear all, I have been in this group for a while, reading stories and comments. I feel I am not alone. Long story short, I had my first Pfizer vax in April, approximately a year ago. And since then, my life is not the same. First, I've got severe headaches that will not be healed with medicine like Tylenol, or ibuprofen. I was taking Lyrica and Bromazepam to keep going. The headaches got better, but I now develop tinnitus in my right ear. The most unpleasant thing is that they are not monotonous, which I would deal with, but it reminds me of Morse code. Random, high-pitched sounds that drive me crazy from early morning to late evening. I take Zolpidem to sleep normally and now started Xanax. I am desperate for help. I don't know what else I can do to improve my well-being. Does anyone else here experience, quote, Morse code sounds? And how do you deal with those? I'm just about a month having those, but I'm already getting crazy.
Thank you for keeping me sane
and offering me hope that this nightmare will come to an end eventually.
Morse code sounds in your head, nonstop. Think about it. Here's another
one. Go ahead.
No,
I was just going to say, the hearing loss and tinnitus, even though, you know, you're not, I guess, crippled from a physical sense. It's certainly a psychological debilitating thing to deal with. It's probably one of the most vexing things to deal with. And there have been people in this group that have been on the verge of suicide, and I suspect a couple of them may have actually followed through with it. If you can imagine living with nonstop high-pitched ringing sounds. Sometimes they sound like a car horn, and quite often accompanied with other symptoms, vertigo. Some people have eye issues as well, vision problems, neuropathies. It's really, really disgusting that these people, they're you know, in this sort of condition, and they're not getting any help.
All right, here's another quickie. My tinnitus developed approximately 2 hours after the second Pfizer vax on June 21st. It is in the form of a high-pitched ringing in my head and ears, similar to a TV in standby mode. It increased to a new level after PB, Pfizer booster, on 21 December. I am pro-vax, and whilst I deliberated long and hard, I decided it was the best thing for me. So she went all the way through a booster, and there has been no let-up since. Spiking often and accompanied by a constant headache, full ear pressure, ear canal pain, blocked sinuses, eye twitching, and three bouts of vertigo. Have tried it all. Zero caffeine, alcohol, sugar, antihistamines, antidepressants, vitamins, altered diet, all to no avail. Brain scan normal, visit with audiologist, ENT of no help whatsoever, bar use white noise as a distraction, and use of the device I'm recommending below. On Wednesday, I finally succumbed to C. I don't know what C is. After
COVID.
2 years, COVID. After 2 years of managing to dodge it, and tinnitus has hit an all-time high, rendering it almost unbearable. I'd say it is unbearable. I couldn't take that. I have come to accept the off-target neuroinflammatory response theory and that it will wear off eventually. I hope to research the Stellate ganglion block with my GP, who is extremely understanding and listens when I have recovered from COVID. The point of my post, though I thought I should give some background first, was to recommend the simple, inexpensive device, blah, blah, blah. It goes on from there. So here's the point. These people are suffering horribly. You heard the one person say, I'm on Xanax. I don't blame them. I hope it helps a little bit. These people should not, however, take SSRI antidepressants, which I'm afraid are being recommended by too many doctors. So that's my little pitch on that. Okay, wrap it up, and we'll say goodnight. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's saddening. The more we see of this, that's it.
Oh, and there are more negative adverse effects being reported now from Novavax, which we'll cover next Monday for you. More.
Yep.
Negative Novavax news. So that's coming.
No surprise when you consider it's just the spike protein, but the spike protein itself is toxic.
It's a killer. It's a killer. All right. Thank you, Erica.
My pleasure, Jeff. Okay. Have a good weekend, everybody.
Thanks. All right. And we will be back on Sunday night with our best of, where the network will continually play the programs for you all the time, and we'll talk again on Monday. Take good care, and for goodness sakes, please prepare. Think, I don't have to tell you. Read the headlines. It's all there. Back soon, and we'll talk soon. Be well.